ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
This morning I mentioned the popularity of Ramayana in traditional Indian culture and even up to the present day, and also its didactic purposes, used for teaching and for teaching proper behavior, and particularly in the sampradaya of Sri Ramanujacharya, Ramayana is quoted to various parts of Ramayana and how different devotees they interacted with the Lord, how different non-devotees also interacted with him. It's in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya more than others is profusely quoted to demonstrate various points of devotional philosophy and understanding. Now, as we're here in the capital of the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, we know very well that the main point they stress is this prapati, sharanagati, taking shelter of the Supreme Lord. Mamekam sharanam raja, taking exclusive shelter of Krishna, Narayana, Rama. That's what that means. It's not just some vague idea what it means to take shelter, but it's specifically defined, and the verse defining what is Sharanagati, the way of taking shelter of the Supreme Lord, that is a well-known verse which Srila Prabhupada quotes in his purport to the Mamekam Sharanam Raja verse of Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, text 66. Anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam rakshishyatiti vishvaso guptritve varanam tata atma nikshepa karpane sharavidha sharanagati. The six ways of surrendering, six aspects of surrendering one's life to Krishna. Srila Prabhupada always translates this Mamekam Sharanam Raja, surrendering to Krishna. Literally would mean taking shelter, but surrendering means this is how you take shelter. You cannot take shelter if one maintains independence. So this taking shelter, Mamekam Sharanam Raja, means Atma Samarpan, offering oneself fully. And that is the actual meaning of initiation. As initiation ceremony is coming up now. What does it mean? What is the import? What's going on? The initiation, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Dika Kale Bhakta Kare Atma Samarpan. Diksha actually means to fully offer oneself. Some arpana means offering. Atma means self, and samarpa means fully. The same idea is conveyed in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya. What we would call initiation, they were called samashraya, means to fully take shelter. Although there are differences in procedures and even some difference in understanding, but the basic idea is the same. We have to take shelter in Krishna by fully offering ourselves to him as servants. And of course the Ramayana is simply full of this. How so many devotees, they fully offered themselves. This morning I spoke about Lakshman, Hanuman, his famous example. Jatayu offered his very life, literally, in the service of Lord Rama. The squirrel was pushing the sand into the ocean. They're all characterized by fully offering themselves. They're all exemplars of this. Then we have again Guha, Vibhishana, Bharat, Shatrughna. They're all fully offered themselves fully as servants to him. So this is the point that the Ramanuja Sampradaya emphasizes very much. And we do also. I mean, how many times have we heard Srila Prabhupada talk about surrendering to Krishna? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches love beyond surrender. But love beyond surrender doesn't mean without surrender. There's no love without surrender. That comes first. The sense of offering oneself completely. In love, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches love that of such a level that the devotee conceives of himself as being even more than Krishna or equal to Krishna. But underlying that is the sense of completely giving oneself to Krishna. The gopis, they can chastise Krishna in love because their love, their life is only meant for Krishna's service. So this point of Sharanagati, which I hope we all know very well, we can discuss, we should discuss again and again, what is this? Because it's only our sense, maintaining a sense of interest separate from that of Krishna, that stands between us and Krishna. If we fully give ourselves to Krishna, then Krishna opens up to us fully. But if we don't want Krishna, if we're maintaining other desires, then Krishna may show himself partially. He's very kind. He may even give himself to a devotee who's not fully surrendered to him. Just we read about one name Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave for Krishna, Kubja Kripamai. He gave mercy to Kubja. She had some other motive for approaching Krishna, not transcendental, but Krishna nevertheless purified her. But our exemplars are devotees like Vibhishana, Hanuman, not materially motivated devotees. We can get, by Krishna is so merciful, he may give us, even if we are not fully on the right line, Krishna being very kind, he may give himself to us, but it's a dangerous course to take. Because if we maintain, if we think I'll maintain material desires and still I'll get Krishna, well, it might take many, many lifetimes, and we might get distracted also. Unless we identify our self-interest fully with that of Krishna, unless our life is only for Krishna, then we may get distracted. And an example of that in Ram Leela is Dvivida, who was in the monkey army of Hanuman fighting, of Sugriva, and fighting with the monkeys for Lord Rama. He was a leader in the army, but then later he lived all the way through, 177 million years later, he was still there at the time of Krishna Leela, and he actually became very offensive and was killed by Balaram. His attitude changed. The acharyas describe, he had some doubt about Lakshman. He thought he considered Lakshman to be just some weakling under the spell of material nature. When Lakshman became stunned by the weapon of who's that? Indrajit. So for that offense, that thought was in his heart, and that gradually, even though he was seemed fully gave himself to Rama, but that because of that seed of offense within his heart, he eventually became very offensive to Rama, to Balarama, and was killed by Balaram. So this full surrender to Krishna, that we have to cultivate. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give love beyond surrender, but if we analyze what are the ways of surrender, we can understand there's no question of talking about, thinking about, or aspiring for gopi prem or vraja prem unless we have this basic surrender to Krishna. Those 6 points are anukulyasya sankalpa, the decision, the firm vow to only perform activities which are favorable for cultivating devotional service, and pratikul yasya varjanam, to forswear everything that will be an obstacle in our devotional progress. So this is not a very difficult thing to understand, that if we want to advance in Krishna consciousness, we have to do what is required for that, and not do anything which will obstruct that. We can also understand that it's quite inappropriate to claim ourselves to be aspirants for the highest levels of praying and discussing intimate pastimes of the gopis and Krishna, but then we don't. Then we may just do something which is against the principles of devotion. You may think, oh, no, I'm discussing the gopis and now I'll go and smoke a cigarette. Or now I'll go and buy a chocolate bar. You may think, chocolate bar? Yeah. Krishna's not... That's what the Sahajiyas in Bengal say, that Krishna, he's very kind. Little thing like eating fish. Then why Krishna, he won't stop his mercy, we have a little fault like eating fish. They don't think it's a fish, you just take it out of the pond and you cook it. And everyone does it. All the Vaishnavas do it also. They're also great devotees. So why would... So he may say chocolate, it's not a big thing. No, it's not a big thing, but it is a thing. And it's not a thing that helps us to progress. There's nothing in the chocolate bar which will help us come closer to Krishna. But the idea that now I require something for my tongue is actually for the mind. We may think, well, anyway, time to time, but then that means the mind will always be agitated. The tongue will always be agitated. Unless we take prasad at regulated times, and if we're thinking, oh, I'm going past the shop. Oh, it's an ice cream shop. Oh, well, I can offer it to Krishna in the mind. Even though already they sold ice cream, the same ice cream to 300 people today. But anyway, I'll offer it to Krishna. Then it's all right. But that means that the tongue is always, the mind is always agitated. So you can see for sense gratification, thinking what I want. Instead of thinking, Krishna Bharadayamai, Karibari, Jibajai, Shaprasadana Dalobhai. Krishna is very kind. He's given us prasad to help us conquer the tongue. Then we're thinking, how can I indulge the tongue? And jiba lalo seje iti uti dhai. Jibo shishto parayan Krishna nahipai. That one who's always thinking how to indulge the tongue, then they're always looking here and there. What's there for the tongue? Shishno da parayan. they become subservient to the demands of the stomach and the genitals, and they don't attain Krishna. So you may think, well, it's just a little thing. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu warns, we don't get Krishna. You won't get Krishna. Why? It's not just a little chocolate bar, what's that? It's not, but it's the whole attitude that goes with that. That now I'm doing something for my own personal pleasure, which is, there's nothing in there for Krishna's pleasure. You may say, well, I'll offer it to Krishna. Although we don't find Krishna eating chocolates. We don't find anywhere in Shastra. But the whole idea, I'll offer it to Krishna, means I want it, therefore I'll offer it to Krishna. Well, that's better than not offering, but the attitude is not atma samarpan, fully giving oneself to Krishna. So, although bhakti is very joyful, it is, bhakti is the activity of the soul in the purified state, Satchit Ananda, the nature of Krishna, the nature of the jiva is Satchit Ananda, Anandamaya Abhyasat, is very blissful by nature. So bhakti is naturally full of all bliss. That's a fact. But for us who are conditioned souls in this material world, if you're actually to take to bhakti, it's very demanding. A commitment is required. We can't have the bliss of the spiritual world and still want to enjoy this material world. The two things don't go together. We may think I'll enjoy here and enjoy there, but as long as we think of enjoying here, even in the name of bhakti, then we have to remain here. That is the meaning of Sharanagati, Mam Ekam Sharanam Raja. It's very demanding, only Krishna. But that is the nature of the soul, to be only surrendered to Krishna. So bhakti is blissful, but we have to understand that the bliss of bhakti is completely distinct from any kind of material happiness. Unless we understand that very clearly, we can't properly perform bhakti. We may come to Krishna, that arto jignyaso artarti, we may come to Krishna with some material motive, and that can be purified. But as long as we maintain separate desires, separate from those of pleasing Krishna, then the bhakti, even though it may be all, we're doing all the rituals, chanting, taking prasadam, but if there's a personal motive, then it won't come to fruition. So we have to very clearly understand all this. And I just read just now before I came here the quote from Srila Prabhupada in the Nectar of Devotion, that unless one, a devotee, I'm paraphrasing it, unless he has clear knowledge of our relationship with Krishna and how to act within it, that means sambandha gyan and knowledge of abhideya, then we cannot come to the perfectional stage, prayojan. It is required. Now it's not that everyone's going to be a very great scholar, but one should know. Otherwise one may be doing bhakti, but with misconceptions of who is Krishna, what is our relationship with Krishna. There are many people who perform what appears to be bhakti. But then if you, and they'll talk about surrendering, fully giving ourselves, and but if you talk and you go a little deeper and discuss more, you'll find that they ultimately think that this is, as I was talking about in North India, the worshippers of Lord Rama, they'll talk about fully surrendering and giving yourself and give the example of Hanuman and this. But ultimately they think Ram is the way to that which is beyond. He's a symbol. They're impersonalists. Ultimately, they're impersonalists. They're doing bhakti, but ultimately, they're impersonalists. Many times I mentioned how, this is many years ago, this is from the 1970s, that during a program at Hindustan Motors, where they make these ambassador cars, that's on the Howrah side of the Ganga, opposite Calcutta. There's a railway station called Hindustan Motors. So we did a program there. The Marwaris, Birlas, they own this. So in the temple there, very nice temple, and there was a diagram, so it's something like your Goloka chart, something like that. So it sort of shows the hellish worlds and then all the different planetary systems, and going up, shows all the different demigods and Brahma, then it shows Vaikuntha with Lakshmi Narayana, then above that Radha and Krishna, and above that some light with Om symbol in it. So they got everything right up to the last point, they got it all wrong, and then everything else is all wrong. So they think that Radha and Krishna are an emanation from the impersonal. So all these things have to be understood very clearly. When we're offering ourselves fully to Krishna, that means to Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, eternally, who we never become part of. We never become one with. We're always separate, as servant to Master. Mayavad destroys, again from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Savior Sevaka Bhava. What is the fault of Mayavad? That the feeling between the master, that the object of service and the servant, that is destroyed. So very clearly we have to understand this. Otherwise, you'll see, if you read that book that's called, what do they call it? Renunciation Through Wisdom. There's actually a title given to several essays by Srila Prabhupada, which are translated into English. He wrote them in Bengali before he came to the Western world. So one of his essays in there is called Muni Gone Mata Brahm. And I can't remember what the English translation is. Anyway, whatever, what translation is given. Anyway, it means the bewildered mind of the thoughtful person, something like that. So in that essay, Srila Prabhupada, he takes up issue with this Dr. Radha Krishna. Although he had a very good name. But his Prabhupada personally knew him. Dr. Radha Krishna became famous as the first president of India, but he was made the first president of India because he was famous as a philosopher at Oxford University, actually. And he was also based at Calcutta University. So it's just, he wasn't a politician. It's just like another one from Tamil Nadu, what's his name, this Muslim, so-called Muslim? Abdul Kalam. He's not a politician, he became the president. He wasn't a politician, he was a scientist and basically a scientist. So Srila Prabhupada knew him personally, this Dr. Radha Krishnan, but he took up issue with, in his writing, again, some of the writings of Dr. Radha Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada quoted Dr. Radha Krishnan quoting Anukul Yasya Sankalpa Pratikul Yasya Vajranang Rakshishatiti Vishvaso Goptrit Vaivaranang Tata Atma Nikshepa Karpanye Sharvita Sharanagati. So this verse is in the Indian culture as it was up to two or three generations previously, this verse was very well known. especially although Dr. Radhakrishna was not a Vaishnava, but being from this area, he would know that verse very well, because among the Vaishnavas, Vaishnava in this part of the world mostly means, as you know, the Sri Vaishnavas. It was very well known. It's the just like we among ourselves in ISKCON, we know Dehino Sminyata Dehe Sarvadhaman Purichaja. So it was very well known, and among educated people in general, it was one of those things which everyone knew. Even about 20 years ago, 20, 25 years ago, I remember seeing in the Deccan Herald, which is a newspaper from Hyderabad, quoting Singhavalokanyai. You probably don't know what that means, but they expected their readers to know what it means. That means what it means, the glands of the lion, the logic of the glands of the lion. The idea is that the lion walks forward through the jungle, the king of the jungle, but sometimes he just looks back like this. So that has various usages. In common usage, that means that one may be very powerful and going on ahead, but you should be careful. Just look back and look at the side. Even the lion looks back. And in scriptural analysis, it means that one may be very confidently going on developing some theory, but you should look back from time to time and see what you already said and what others said, and to keep some flow, so you just don't get carried away. Don't just charge forward. So anyway, the point I'm making is that that was very well known. So Prabhupada quoted this. He quoted Dr. Radhakrishnan quoting it. But Dr. Radhakrishnan gave a completely impersonal understanding. And Prabhupada saying, how can you give an impersonal understanding? You taking shelter of means you take shelter of a person. It's the most, so that's the title he gave. Muni Gone Mata Brahm. Even though he's a Muni, a very thoughtful person, world famous philosopher, actually. But he can't understand this very simple point. It's just ABC point that you have to take shelter of a person. You're giving yourself to a person. It's not. And also Prabhupada made the point that those whom the writers who made this verse, it's quoted in Hari Bhakti Vilas, but it's not from Puranas, it's from some ancient writings. It may be something like this Anya Bilashita Shunyam, which was written by Rupa Goswami and summarizes so many teachings. So it's always been understood in this way. It's a Vaishnava principle. So to try to present it as some kind of moral principle, as Dr. Radhakrishnan was doing, you take the teachings, and then just like it's become quite popular now, Bhagavad Gita for personality development or management, and you divorce the teachings from its context. So you say, anukulyasya sankalpa, whatever you're doing, you should be committed to do whatever is required so that you can do it properly. Well, you could apply that to some big demon also, but that's not the context in which it was spoken. If you want to be the biggest demon in the world, you have to be committed. I'm going to do whatever is required. I want to be a billionaire, dollar billionaire. So you have to be committed to do whatever is required to make it, to fulfill that big goal. Okay, you can say that, but that's not the context in which it was spoken. The context is bhakti to Vishnu. And to try to take that, recast it in any other context is, Srila Prabhupada would simply say rascaldom. It's speciousness. That means that it is misrepresenting. So Srila Prabhupada made this point. So we should know very clearly that we are meant for this. This is meant for surrender to Krishna. We're meant to surrender to Krishna. What does surrender to Krishna mean? It means to fully give ourselves. Many times people would say to Srila Prabhupada, sometimes even his own disciples, you see their movements, like transcendental meditation was a very big movement in the Western world at that time, whereas ISKCON devotees, there were just a few. Although it seemed like there were many. If we ask someone in America in the late 1970s, how many Krishna devotees do you think there are in America? They'd say, oh, maybe 500,000, something like that. There were just, how many were there? There were about
5,000 disciples.
Prabhupada had 5,000 disciples, and in America maybe 3,000, something like that. But they were everywhere. They were so active. You go from one city, a devotee approaches you selling a book. And you go to another city, someone else approaches you and selling a book. And then you see devotees on Harinam Sankirtan. And there was a big court case against the devotees, just a handful of devotees, because they were so prominent. But the numbers were not very many compared to other groups. So Srila Prabhupada said that, well, if you're selling a diamond, you can't expect to get many customers. If you're selling glass beads, you may get many customers. But still, a diamond is a diamond. He also told that story, I believe that's maybe from Hitopadesh, that the rabbit, the female rabbit, said to the tigress, that you see, you only have one child every year or so, and I have many children every few weeks. And tiger said, yeah, that's true, but my child is a tiger. Then gobbled up the rabbit. I don't think that's part of the story, but that's the logical conclusion. So Krishna consciousness it's not some cheap thing. We can try and sell it as being something cheap, but then it won't be the same thing. Srila Prabhupada came to the Western countries and he insisted, no meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication, no illicit sex. Srila Prabhupada said, I thought when I went there and said this, they'd say, Swamiji, thank you for coming, just go back to India. He didn't think, who will accept this? At that time, probably in America at that time, there was no one following this, except maybe someone who was in a coma. I don't think anyone followed these principles. Anyone? No meat eating? That would knock out about 99% of the population at the time. No gambling. Maybe some people, gambling not so much. I mean, many people do it, but many people don't do it also. Not out of principle, but then no intoxication, down to no tea or coffee. It was just not imaginable. And no illicit sex. They had no idea what's illicit sex. They know what sex is, but they don't know what illicit. There's no conception of illicit sex. So it was unimaginable. Srila Prabhupada often quoted his godbrother, Goswami Maharaj, who he was in contact in England with this Lord Linlithgow, who's the Marquis of Zetland. So he was very favorable, actually. He was to the Gauriya Math there, the Gauriya Mission in the Western world. And he'd formerly been based in Calcutta. So one time, this Lord Linlithgow, this is Scottish, he's Scottish, Jokingly, he asked Goswami Maharaj, "Can you make me a brahmana?" He had some idea what it means to be a brahmana, having been in India. Goswami Maharaj said, "Yes." "Then? Only you have to follow these principles. No meat eating, no illicit sex, no gambling, no intoxication." "Impossible," came the reply. "This is our life. This is what we live for. Now what's the point of being alive unless you have all these things?" So Prabhupada came with an impossible mission. But he wasn't going to compromise. He thought that, well, everyone can't follow this, so let's make it easy. Okay, so you chant Hare Krishna and you don't have to follow any principles. And then maybe later on you can get better. But he didn't. He didn't say that. He said, if anyone wants to come and join us in kirtan, anyone can come. We have no restriction. But if they want to be serious and be initiated and live in the temples, then they have to follow these principles. And not, if they want to live in the temples, they also have to rise early in the morning. They have to perform services. Nowadays, sometimes you see in the temple, I've seen in the Western world, they have rules and regulations for devotees living in the temple must do minimum 8 hour service every day. I thought it was supposed to be 24 hours. They say minimum 8 hour service every day. But it's supposed to be 24 hours, isn't it? Sleeping is allowed. But the idea is you just sleep so that you can get up and do more service. But now they have contracts with the devotees living in the temples that you must do this much service. And then after that, up to you. So this is not brahmachari life. Brahmachari gurukule vasandanto guru hitam. Acharandasavan nicho guru sudrira sodra. Brahmachari lives like a slave in the ashram of the guru. Dasavan achara. Das is translated as servant or slave. It means just completely whatever the guru says. The guru calls to take food, you take. He don't call, he don't take. That's all. That much. You may go and beg for the ingredients for the food and bring the firewood and cut the vegetables, but if the guru doesn't call you to eat, you don't eat. Of course, generally the guru would call to eat. But that's the attitude. He lives completely subordinate in the Gurukul. So the ashram is supposed to be like that. Very disciplined. Disciple means discipline. It's not a playground. So this commitment, of course in the beginning Srila Prabhupada didn't insist on any commitment, but gradually he introduced more rules and regulations, gave tasks to devotees, set challenges for them, distribute so many books, open so many centers. We hear about the bliss of the early days, but that we can't bring that bliss back artificially. That bliss was based on complete commitment and dedication to Srila Prabhupada and his mission, with complete faith in Srila Prabhupada. So we may try to bring the bliss by having kirtan with lots of different instruments and dancing in various styles, but we can't bring it artificially. It's not that, well, we'll go to a kirtan mela and we'll do kirtan all day for 3 days and we'll be in bliss, and then we'll go back to our semi-materialistic life. But it doesn't work like that. Krishna is not our servant that he'll, okay, now I'll come and give you bliss. And then you can go back to whatever you like. Yeah. Krishna gives the bliss of bhakti to those who are fully surrendered to him. And for others, the prescription is bhukti mukti spriha javat pishachi hridi vartate tavat bhakti sukhasyata katam abhyudaya upavet. This is Rupa Goswami's observation, couched in the form of a question, that as long as one is cultivating within the heart the witch-like material desires for sense gratification or desire for liberation, then where is the question of the bliss of bhakti? So the bliss comes from surrender. We want the bliss, but we can't get it on our own terms. It's on Krishna's terms. So bhakti is blissful, but that commitment is required, actually giving ourselves to Krishna. Then Krishna reciprocates. Or he might not. He might put it, generally devotees, if we are to be frank, generally those devotees who want to give themselves fully to Krishna, Krishna gives them so many difficulties. Now if we say this to newcomers, then they might not come. But actually it's a fact. Krishna gives so many tests so that we can become purified and we can see if we actually want to surrender to Krishna. Gives us various tests and difficulties so that we can face those tests, praying to Krishna, and so that we can make our commitment very strong to Krishna. If there are no tests or difficulties, then we don't know. Actually, if our devotion is real devotion, Prahlad, how could we understand he's such a great devotee? If he hadn't been tortured by Hiranyakashipu, he remained steadfast. So Kunti, she prayed that you give us difficulty. That will help us to come to you. So who dares to pray like this? Give me more and more difficulty. If we can pray like that, then we can aspire to follow in the footsteps of Kunti and the Pandavas. Please give me, Krishna, whatever is required that I may come to you. It may not be what we want. We might think, well, I'll live very happily in this world and go to Krishna also. And yes, sometimes we find in Prabhupada's books it's written like that. And our aim is to, one of the aims of the Krishna Conscious Movement is to revive Varnashram culture, whereby people can live peacefully, relatively peacefully and happily in this world, in an atmosphere that's favorable for cultivating Krishna consciousness. But even in that situation, we may find so many difficulties. Actually, for those who have small difficulty, for them it seems to be very big. If you're living a very peaceful life and you break your leg, then for you that's a very major difficulty. But for someone who's being tortured every day, they might think, oh, if I could just be free and have a broken leg, that would be much better. That's why so many people come to me and say, oh, I have a problem. I say, oh, I have a problem, huh? Or they often say, I have one problem. So you're very lucky. Everyone else has many problems. They come and they, many times they seem to think that it's only them in the whole world. I have such a problem. Oh, such a terrible problem. And they don't seem to recognize that everyone has so many problems. But I always tell them that whatever the problem is, it could be much worse. Or you could have other problems also. I have no money. My wife is suing me for divorce. My children are all sick. Well, it could be that there's you could have multiple diseases also, for instance. And another thing is, whatever your problem is, there are plenty of people in the world who have much worse problems. So this is just some basic understanding we can think of. We always think, oh, I have a problem. Oh. Become overwhelmed by that. We can see it's Krishna's mercy on us. Krishna is teaching us something. And also, we can think, as we are enjoined to think, tatenu kampam susamikshamano bhunjana evatma kritang vipakam vidvagva pubhir vidadhannamaste jiveta yo muktipade sadaya bhak. The devotee thinks, now I'm going through some suffering. Why? Because of what is the cause? Myself? I've performed so many bad activities. Now I'm getting the result. Actually, I should be punished much more. But Krishna is just giving me a little punishment. So let me, just to warn me not to go that way. So let me just, whatever I have to suffer due to my past sinful activities, let me suffer that and go on serving Krishna. So one who has that attitude, such a devotee will be delivered by Krishna just because of that attitude. I'm suffering, that is my fault. But anyway, let me go on worshipping Krishna. But you know, Thakur sings that Nidja karma guna doshe jay janma pai janme janme jaina tava nama guna gai. He's paraphrasing this from the Shikshashtaka. According to my previous activities, pious and impious, whatever kind of birth I get, he says, may I in every birth simply glorify your, Krishna's, name and qualities. So this is the attitude of a devotee. So anyway, anukul yasya sankalpa pratikul yasya varjanam. So this can be anukul yasya sankalpa pratikul yasya varjanam. To perform only activities which are favorable for cultivation of devotion, to reject all that which will inhibit our development of devotion. So this can all be summarized as, in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's words, Krishnarthe kila cheshta. A devotee, whatever he does only for the sake of Krishna. That's Krishna consciousness summarized. Abhideya, devotional service, summarized. Everything is done for the sake of Krishna. Everything for Krishna's pleasure. I was saying Ramayana is a... that's a great textbook of bhakti, of how we have to perform bhakti in a way that's only pleasing for Krishna. But actually, if we see the lives of the great acharyas, Ramanuja's life, just a few little bits I spoke about yesterday. But that's a textbook of how we can do everything in the service of the Lord. One story, Srila Prabhupada also stole this, that there was one disciple of Ramanuja, husband and wife. They were very poor, but they were very devoted. And she was young and beautiful. And there was some merchant who was always desirous to illicitly enjoy her. So many times he offered that, you're living in poverty. You come, you just spend a little time with me, then I'll give you whatever you need. Then, in other words, he wanted to enjoy her, but she refused. She always refused. One time, suddenly, she got the news, Ramanuja is coming. Her husband is away from home at the time. She thought, I have to feed him and his followers. So she thought, what to do? I have nothing in the house. We're completely poor. She didn't even have proper cloth to cover her. She was so poor. But she went to the merchant and said, My guru is coming, you give me this, all these ingredients, and then afterwards, whatever you want, I'll do. So he was very happy, he gave over, she cooked everything for him. And then there was some story that she was so poor, she didn't even have cloth to cover her. So when Ramanuja came then, he could understand, and he passed some cloth inside so she could cover herself. And then the merchant himself had a change of mind, that she's so pure that she would never do for herself to get some wealth so she can live comfortably. For her guru she will do. So this is an example. Then his mind became changed. The merchant's mind became changed. So this is an example, doing everything for Krishna, or in this case for guru, serving the guru, that I have to do whatever. I don't like it for myself, but for his service, be prepared to do anything. So this is the attitude. We see what is favorable for cultivating devotion and see what is not favorable. Not often, but sometimes we hear devotees say, well, is it all right to do this? Is it all right to do that? As if they're just trying to get the minimum level, that is it okay to eat chocolate? Yeah, okay. Then you don't have to, can you eat this and that? Just like, how can we get the maximum sense gratification and still get Krishna praying? That's the attitude. Instead of thinking, well, can I get away with this? Often devotees, they ask the question, well, what do you do if you make this offense or that offense? I tell them, don't even ask that question. That means you're already thinking how to make the offense, and then you're thinking how I'll get rid of it afterwards. But don't even, to think like that is, you're all practically on the verge of making an offense. You're planning and scheming how to make an offense. So just don't think, what do you do if you make an offense, how you can get free from the result. The very thought is offensive. The offensive mentality.
They say in the West, what's the least I can do and still go to heaven?
Yeah, the whole Christian idea, instead of following Jesus' teaching, they just say, you believe in Jesus. Finished. Actually, the Ramanuja Sampradaya, one branch is something like that also. But we won't discuss that, right? Something like that. Just you, all responsibility to Jesus. Jesus died on the cross for our sins, so we'll go on sinning. Prabhupada said that they're crucifying him. They themselves are crucifying him by their sinning. So, whatever we see in our day-to-day life, what we're doing, is it favorable for devotion or not favorable for devotion? Now, especially those who are grihasthas, they have family considerations, social considerations, and often they won't exactly gel with the spiritual considerations, so they may have to make some adjustment. But as far as possible, they should live their life in such a way that they can be Krishna conscious. And therefore, again, Srila Prabhupada wanted to have these farm communities, devotees living, grihasthas can have the full facility of devotees living in temples. That means they can have morning program, evening program, every day, living with devotees, not having to mix with non-devotees. They can have in family life, you can have the same facility, but you have to live very simply. So you can consider that, those of you are in family life, if you want to make a situation which is very favorable for your spiritual advancement, then you can, it may not be for everyone, but you can go to the farm community and daily morning program, evening program. We find these Shravan Kirtan camps that what we call the congregational devotees, they, they seem to appreciate more than our temple devotees, because our temple devotees, they're doing this all the time. They have full morning program, evening program, all the time living with devotees. For most of our grihasthas, from the spiritual point of view, their life, the way they live it, it's they're living among in a hellish city, among hellish people. Of course, the materialistic people don't think it's hellish, but the devotees, as you take to devotional service, you can appreciate more and more. This material world, it's just horrible. Unless we're thinking like that, we're not really developing spiritual vision. It's horrible. Oh, especially these modern cities, they're horrible. What's the most horrible thing is the people. It's not the pollution of the air, but everyone's materialistic. They have no interest in Krishna consciousness. Everyone's just dealing with each other, just what's in it for me. They may be polite and this and that, but no one cares, superficially polite, no one cares for anyone else. So this major decision to make a whole, this whole change in life so that one can be in a situation that is favorable. Srila Prabhupada said that this farm communities is to make, Varnashram is to make a situation that's favorable for our spiritual advancement. So anukulyasya sankalpa, pratikulyasya varjanam, rakshishya titi vishvaso, goptritve varanang tata. To understand that Krishna is our protector, Krishna is our maintainer. And in this way feel an intimate relationship with Krishna always. Maintainer and protector, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, after accepting sannyas, he would walk on the road chanting, Krishna, 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 hey. Krishna, 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 hey. Krishna, 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 pahi mam. Krishna, 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 raksha mam. Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava Pahimam, Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rakshamam. So sannyasi, he has no means of protection or shelter from society. He's no longer any member of any family or village or caste. He's fully dependent on Krishna. Krishna protects him and maintains him. So this is, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is praying like this. But everyone's supposed to cultivate that. Superficially, we're living in some family, some society, some country. But we should know, ultimately, only Krishna is our protector and our maintainer. And to cultivate this attitude is essential in Sharanagati. Because as long as we're thinking that we have any relationship with this material world, then we can't fully enter into our relationship with Krishna. Then Atma Nikshepa, Atma Samarpan, Atma Nikshepa, fully giving ourselves, taking shelter of Krishna means to fully give ourselves to Him. Nikshepa gives the idea of throwing ourselves. And it's not some calculation, well, I'll do this and then Krishna will do. Of course, that's there. There's study of Shastra, understanding of Krishna and Krishna consciousness from Shastra, but ultimately the attitude has to be, if we try to understand everything with our mind, there's no end to it. We can't understand everything, even the Vaishnava philosophy. We can't understand. We have tiny intelligence, and Krishna is unlimited. So, just give ourselves to Krishna. All right, instead of trying to understand everything or thinking that by my following, by my chanting, by my following the rules, I'm becoming Krishna. No, just fully throw ourselves at Krishna. Then Krishna, you do what you like with me. It's up to you. I'm dependent on your mercy. And that links with the karpanya or dainya, humility. And it's translated as humility, but it's a sense of thinking oneself to be very lowly fallen and fully dependent on Krishna's mercy, which is actually a fact. We are fully dependent on Krishna's mercy. Sometimes we think that someone who has a nature of being very quiet, well, they're very humble. Well, that's true, but that's a materialistic kind of humility. Someone may be very quiet by nature just because they don't want to get into fights with others so they can live peacefully. But it's not a sense of humility of giving ourselves to Krishna. Or one may be very polite. There are so many demons who are very polite. But they're still their demons. It means they don't have any sense of subordination to Krishna. Their politeness, of course, it's better superficially than, at least superficially, it's better than being impolite. But their politeness is just part of their Ishvaroham aham bhogi mentality. I am here to enjoy this world and dominate it. So they find that politeness is very useful for doing so. How to win friends and influence people. Win friends, the whole idea is win friends for my advantage. But that's not friendliness. That's not actual friendliness. So the idea of friend, it's someone who I make friends with, and as long as they're useful for my schemes. But this whole mentality is completely opposite to that of Krishna consciousness. So others may try to cultivate such consciousness also. In Buddhism, they also have this idea of bodhisattvas who act for the benefit of others, and they come again, again and again to this world to deliver others. But the idea is to deliver others from the suffering of this world, but actually there's no suffering. It's a funny philosophy, because the bodhisattvas come to deliver, but who do they deliver? There's no one to deliver, and there's nothing to deliver from, and there's nothing to deliver them into, because ultimately everything is emptiness. Anyway, they have huge writings, so much philosophy, to try to explain all this, but basically it doesn't make any sense anyway. But there's no real love. The idea, oh, great compassion, delivering others, but there's no ultimate goal to go to Krishna and serve Him, fully subordinate to Him always in the spiritual world. So humility means to accept that I am the eternal servant of Krishna. And a great example of humility is Hanuman burning Lanka. Doesn't sound very humble. He very humbly burned Lanka down. Well, he wasn't humble in relation to Ravana, but he was humble in relationship to Rama. That he risked everything for the sake of Rama. He did everything only for the pleasure of Rama. So, everything based on knowledge. So we should know this. I'm just going through this here. We should hear this again and again, but it's very apt in relationship to the teachings of Sri Ramanuja. And of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he also quoted this verse we find in Chaitanya Charitamrita. It is the very basis of our Krishna consciousness is this Sharanagati. Hare Krishna. So 6:30 we'll have Arati. Yeah. Yeah. Any question about this topic? You always have questions. Okay.
We generally talk about no meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication. Produce. But I don't know whether among Buddhists at least.
It's a big topic. I'm not going to get into it now. It's a bit tangential to the topic. What does no illicit sex mean? It means sex for the purpose of procreation, no more than once a month. That's the simple definition. If you want more information, you can ask Haripada Prabhu. He's been Grihastha for many years. Practically his whole life in Krishna consciousness. But we're not. I think we won't discuss it now because it's a bit off topic. I did mention it, but it's not central to the discussion. Okay, so we should go ahead with Aroti. Aroti Korena Brahma. Okay, so you're representing Brahma here. Aroti Korena Brahma Adi Devagone, and the devotees, they're all demigods.